convention, Canadians, you know, and see, we come from Canada. I mean, Canada, we spoke Canadian.
Right.
We didn't have these here great separations of the United States has these districts. So we're talking to a fellow in Newfoundland or a fellow in Nova Scotia. We're talking just the same as if you're talking to another guy in B.C. And we went in that way, and that was the attitude we took. But there was a great talk going on. By about the third day, we were pretty quiet along and taking what's going. And they were talking about the Mexican question, the wetbacks coming across, you know, from the river and from Mexico and working. So we listened to all this. And the third day, we're accused of being members of the Communist Party. And in the Constitution at that time, anybody that was a member of the Communist or any other such parties, fascist or such, weren't eligible for membership. So they had one or two in the international, and more in the upper end, were out for a clean out. They had quite a bunch of trials at the international, and they come up before the convention in New York City. And they got their way in some of them. So that was that part of it.
Can you explain, I know in the shipyards in Vancouver, the Labour Progressive Party, which were the communists, tried to organize and take the leadership of the Shipyards Federation around 1942-1943. And affiliate to the CCL. What happened with that?
The shipyard, the steel workers, or what took the steel worker was the ship. We'll get to the exact name in a minute. They took over. It used to be in the First War, it was the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Blacksmiths, Iron Shipbuilders,
right.
Blacksmiths and Iron Shipbuilders. There's one other category. They had the contract. It was an international contract for the International Boilermakers in the First World War. Then the Second War, some had carried on. A fellow I worked with that was an active member in the First War was also, he was a coordinator. The government put in a labor sort of a representative of them, where we worked through as a sort of a coordinator, and he was originally in the First War, but it was the leftist element of the workers, mm-hmm. and they'd got a nucleus, because there was the International Boilermakers and Iron Shipbuilders and Helpers finished with the First World War when the shipbuilding stopped, and then there was only the odd few working in the different plants, small shipyards around, and we had members at Burrard, and there were still members at Burrard carrying through the same companies as it was during the war, carried on. The machinists were there, the Marine Workers Union was the one that took over the Boilermakers and several of the other setups that hooked together.
Didn't they affiliate to the CCL? Did they disaffiliate from the Trades and Labor Congress and affiliate?
Oh, well, they belonged here to the Labor Council, and then there was one trouble in there after years that they were putting them out, but they took them back in again.
Right.
They didn't take a very active part in the Trades Council. That is going back years ago. And I'd have to give the exact theory of it. I'd have to go back through
the papers.
I worked with them. I worked on many committees. Art Lanoux of the Boilermakers was a representative of the shipyard, you know, ship workers.
Mm-hmm.
He was a representative for them, and he was. He was a leftist,
right.
A good one. And Jimmy Barton was the representative for the pipe fitters and steam fitters.
What about Bill
AFL.
Stewart?
Hmm?
What about Bill Stewart? He was...
The...
Bill Stewart or something? William Stewart? Was he the...
Oh, he was just it's quite a name, the Pipefitters Union.
Right, right.
There's pipefitters and that. I'd have it here after the exact wording. And then I was from the machinist. And the three of us were by the, about 17 outfits, we represented the grievance committee for anything that come on.
Right.
We'd take it up with the management there, with the coordinator that they had elected, who was this former Boilermaker in the First World War. He was in his prime then, but he was older than that and this one, and he got to it, was active in the Marine Workers Union.
Right. Was there ever a women's auxiliary for those unions? A women's auxiliary for those unions?
Well, the women belonged to the union the same as the men, only the one union. The women belonged to the ship workers union, the welders and that. The ones that were working in the machine work and ours, they belonged to the machinist union.
What about wives, though? Was there like a women's auxiliary that did support work and socials for the union or anything like that?
I just kind of get it back in. I didn't get it exactly.
Sorry. Was there like a women's auxiliary for the union? A women's auxiliary?
Well, the women are just the same as I am, a member of the union. They come to the meeting, they had a vote.
Yeah, right. I meant for like wives and...
Oh, there was in places there was wives, and some of them in the, particularly in the, marine workers, they had... Wives were the wires, or some of them had taken up welding and that, mostly in those type of jobs. Some of them, there's as many of them, there was some of both in the union, the husband and the wife. And as I say, when the time of the, when it comes to the layoffs, the war's come to the end, there had to be layoffs and that. We were called in and had a talk, three or four of us, and then... we had a regular meeting and we voiced our opinions. And as I say, I had a very unpopular one for a while. Mine was that where there was two working in the shipyard, that there shouldn't be two paychecks going into one family and no paycheck into another. And that raised quite a conference when the NDPs, or the Canadian Commonwealth paper at that day, they give me a ride, and the Boilermakers paper really give me a ride. And at the council meeting, it was mentioned at the Trade and Labor Council, and Schauer got up and he says, Foster's either an awful brave man or an awful damn fool, was his ex statement.
Did people, were there any, like, sort of demonstrations or anything like that against layoffs at the end of the war?
Not in the yard, because it wasn't a case of everything coming to a stop at the same time. A lot of the yards carried on with repair work and that for a while, and the finishing off of ships that were partly under construction.
Who got laid off first? People would,
it didn't matter. Right. I saw women were there. Women weren't laid off,
right.
as their skills weren't needed. They were laid off.
Right. Okay.
And to be in the ship better than that, and installing machinery and that, which is craft work. I mean, it's precision work in many cases. They hadn't been trained in that field.
Right.
They had mostly the big part outside of our bolt shop and that, where it's a reputation. The only I would go nuts there in a short while, you know, threading bolts all day or tapping out nuts all day for 8 hours. But didn't matter. It didn't seem to matter to them. But they're good for. They can't be beat for repetition work. No comparison in there.
On the Labor Council, were there any women who were active, who were representatives of their union?
Oh, the shop stewards. They had their shop steward, the same as the machine shop, the same as the engine fitters outside. They had their shop steward who brought their fact or anything. And if their shop steward, I was the head shop steward there, if they had some problem, they'd come down and say, then if it couldn't be then, if it was policy, settle it up at the union meeting.
Right. How many, were there any delegates on the Vancouver Labor Council who were women? when you were around, like, let's see, people okay. like Ellen Barber or Helena Guttridge or later on other people?
I can't just say for sure. I don't remember in those days. I don't think there were in those days. Yeah. No, I can't remember one. We.
And,
We had members took all parts in the union, that is, all in the meetings and...
There are women who played a really active role.
When they belong to the union, join the union, they're entitled to all the rights and privileges. Right, yeah. So there's no stopping them. And I don't think anybody tried to stop them. It was, we're glad to, lots of time to get their view.
Okay.
And we were kind of burnt, you know, talking about the wetbacks coming across and that. Because so many different sections of states is not a unified setup. But our guys right from Newfoundland to here were like just we're all the same. We talked and did things. So I got up and said, after they did, and they never used the term Canadian, I said the gist of it was that I said that that highway you're talking about, I said, it happens to be that there's pretty near 1,200 miles of it is up in that foreign country amongst those foreigners up there that they, I think it's called Canada. And I said, maybe those foreigners up there would have something to say where you built your road, you know. And I went on. After that, when they get up and speak, they say, United States, and Canada, from then on in the convention.
This is interesting, too, because this seems to be the people from Canada saying that they wanted to have the right to elect the vice president who was the Canadian vice president and not have it vetoed by the Americans.
Yeah, we got, there's a lot of things, there's a lot in there, these books that come up in certain one section.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, we elect our own vice president. But we had in those times, as I said, we had about four sections of the states that were United States, as far as they were concerned. I was on the... you don't get on many committees if you're... You know, you're not chanced to be taken on many committees because there's only 8 or 10 men taken out of a million and some members, you know. And
you're on the
Marine Committee.
I put up a big fight
for organizing in Canada, and I got that. I got a business agency set up. But I like to... get that one. We held our own anyways with their best they had at the convention.
God darn it.
Things were going, I wanted to speak. I wanted to say something. I don't know whether I ever get in that position, but I wanted to speak and I couldn't speak. I thought I had an apple, you know. I couldn't do anything. So the next time, I got a little speech out. And after I managed that little issue, then it got easy. It come natural, you know. But I always remember that. So it went for several meetings that you wanted to say something in it, but you didn't just have the...
Nerve.
You know, you wasn't too sure, but I learned. Well, I worked the ship. I was in 16, when I went in at 16, and I went in, I got a job as reamer's helper for a couple of months, and I was husky. I weighed around 178. I mean, a good trim. I was playing ball in that for 30 years. And I went from that, I got short of a bucker up. I went bucking up rivets, and then I was working along. I worked at that quite a while. We're on piecework. I could make more money bucking up with a good riveter than I could alone. You only got $4.60 a day then for a day's work, unless you're on piecework. So I worked along, and then one day the boss come up and told me to come down below. He said, "This is a fellow old fella. He was Jones, Bobby Jones. He was a most grouchy looking guy you'd want, and quiet." And so he says, "Go down." And I says, "Go down below with gangplank at the bottom. Well, geez, I didn't know what he wanted. He didn't tell me what for. So I got down there and told me this is a gang. He said, go up riveting on the top deck. And I was riveting before when I was 17, before I was 18. Well, that was quite a boost. When I went in there working, I thought the goal was to be a riveter. And if you thought you had the world, you're young enough to think you had the world, you know, or not. And I found out after that you hadn't began. There was nothing to it when the war finished. And